Welcome to A Contra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of A Contra AI.
Welcome, everyone. Today, we're doing a deep dive into Teping Chen's debut collection, Land of Big Numbers, Stories. It came out in 2021, and honestly, it feels like such an important book for understanding contemporary China. It's not just fiction. It feels like necessary observation, you know, but wrapped up in these really compelling stories.
Absolutely. And I think to really get it, you have to look at the author herself, Teping Chen. Her background is key.
Oh.
Born to Taiwanese immigrants, right? But then she also spent years as a Wall Street Journal correspondent, living and working in Beijing.
That's such a unique combination, isn't it? You get the insider cultural feel, maybe from her heritage, but also that sharp journalistic eye.
Exactly. It's that blend of precision and real empathy that hits you. She's not just reporting facts. She's digging into the human feeling underneath the headlines. And the title, Land of Big Numbers, it tells you so much right away.
Yeah, it sets up that central theme, doesn't it? China often gets defined by these huge statistics, GDP, population, tech growth.
Right, the big numbers. But Chen seems determined to pull back the curtain on those macro figures. She wants to show us the individual lives, the sort of micro stories that get lost or, frankly, crushed by those numbers.
I really like that frame, the individual versus the sum. And the book itself, it's this incredible mosaic, 12 stories.
Yeah, interconnected stories that jump around bustling cities like Beijing, remote villages, even touching on the Chinese diaspora experience in the U.S.
That covers a lot of ground.
It really does.
Yeah.
But the common thread, I think, running through all of them is this struggle for personal agency. You know, how do you find meaning or love or just carve out a life for yourself?
When you're up against this massive, powerful state and society's changing at warp speed around you.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? How much control do any of us really have when these huge forces are at play?
Okay, so let's lean into that core conflict then. The individual versus the system. A system that seems to value collective progress, those big numbers, over individual fulfillment. What are the hidden costs, the things that don't show up on the balance sheet of the economic miracle?
That's the heart of it, isn't it? The price of progress.
Yeah.
Chen is brilliant at showing how all this advancement, economic, technological, it comes with these deep human costs, costs that statistics just can't capture. We're talking about displacement, feeling alienated, losing your footing.
Losing certainty.
Yeah, that's a big one. There's a quote in there that really nails this feeling, this anxiety of modern life. Something.
Oh, and I think I know the one. In the old days, people had problems, but they also had certainties.
That's it. Now there was prosperity, but everything was a question mark. It's that paradox. Things are getting better on paper, but people feel more adrift.
That feeling really comes through in the characters, especially when you look at how ideology shapes their lives or even tears them apart. The story Lulu is just devastating on that front.
Oh, Lulu is masterful, using twins. I mean, talk about the closest possible bond to show this massive ideological split in the country. You have one brother, he's idealistic, gets involved in online dissidents, pushing for real change.
And then his twin sister, Lulu, she goes the other way entirely.
Completely. Pragmatism, survival. She ends up working as an assistant for a government official, part of the system her brother is fighting against.
It just sets up this incredibly painful situation. And the climax isn't some big political event. It's personal. It's the brother getting arrested and the absolute wreckage of their relationship.
Yeah. And you're left thinking about Lulu. How does she live with that compromise, helping the system that basically swallowed her brother whole?
It's that question the book raises, isn't it? How can two people from the same womb end up seeing the world so differently?
Black and white versus shades of gray, maybe. Survival versus conviction. Chen doesn't really judge Lulu, though. You feel the immense pressure she's under. Sometimes, you know, pragmatism feels like the only choice left.
Right. But it's not all about politics and urban life. Chen also captures this sort of untamed individual spirit, which brings us to Flying Machine.
Ah, old cow. Yeah, what a character. This elderly farmer, no formal education, who just decides he has to build his own airplane from scrap metal.
It's such a pure, almost absurd ambition. It's not about money or power or anything the state values. It's just the dream of flying.
And that's where the conflict comes in, right? His very personal, kind of eccentric dream immediately clashes with the bureaucracy. They just don't know what to do with him.
If it doesn't boost the GDP or serve some official purpose, it's just suspicious. Wasted effort.
Pretty much. But the genius of the story, I think, is that the emotional peak isn't about whether the plane actually flies successfully. It doesn't. Not really.
Right.
The real point is the act of building it. That quiet defiance. That insistence on his own individual vision, even if it seems crazy, it's a form of resistance in itself.
That idea of quiet resistance, or maybe just endurance, in the face of a kind of absurd system, that links perfectly to Gubeku's spirit, doesn't it? Capturing the everyday urban grind.
Oh, absolutely. Gubeku's spirit is such a clever little allegory.
Yeah.
The whole story is just about waiting for a new subway line to open.
Yeah.
Which it never seems to do. It's always delayed.
So the commuters are just stuck.
Yeah.
Waiting.
Yeah, perpetually waiting. And this shared experience of just constantly waiting, being promised something that never arrives, it actually creates this strange little community among them. A community built on resignation, almost.
It really works as a metaphor for that feeling of illusory progress, right? The better future, the modern convenience, it's always coming, but never actually here.
Exactly. And the name of the station, the Gubeku spirit, becomes this dark joke. The spirit isn't progress, it's just putting up with it. Waiting becomes the norm.
And Chen sometimes pushes beyond realism to capture that absurdity, doesn't she? She blends that journalistic detail with moments that feel almost surreal.
She does. It's a really effective technique for making these big, abstract social critiques feel concrete, feel tangible.
Like in the story New Fruit. That one really stuck with me.
Ah, the kiwo. Yeah. This mysterious new fruit appears on the market, and if you eat it, it can basically induce specific emotions or memories on demand.
Like a shortcut to feeling good or peaceful or nostalgic.
Right. You can just buy the feeling you want.
Hmm.
It's such a sharp commentary on consumer culture, isn't it? And maybe that deeper search for authentic connection in a world that feels increasingly superficial.
Why bother with the hard work of real emotions when you can just eat a piece of fruit?
It really exposes that potential hollowness that can come along with prosperity, that spiritual cost again.
And speaking of chasing easy wins that turn out to be destructive, we have to come back to the title story, Land of Big Numbers.
Right, the gambler. This guy leaves his steady, safe government job because he gets swept up in the frenzy in the stock market.
Chasing that modern Chinese dream, right? The idea that anyone can strike it rich, become one of the big numbers themselves.
Exactly. But the market, it's presented as this wild, unpredictable force, maybe even manipulated. It's definitely not a level playing field. It's a modern fable, really, about the dangers of that kind of speculation, especially in that specific context.
And the story just hammers home that point about how small the individual is against these massive economic forces. There's that killer line.
Oh, I know. In the land of big numbers, you were either a zero or part of a dizzying sum.
Yeah. He bet everything on becoming part of the sum, not realizing he could be erased just as easily. Oof. That just captures the precariousness perfectly.
It really does. And that feeling, that sense of fragility, that's what makes the whole collection so powerful, I think. Chen takes these big abstract ideas, GDP, policy, ideology, and she makes them personal. She shows you the human faces behind the headlines. Lulu, old cow, the gambler.
Right. It completely dismantles any simple single story about what China is. It's far more complex, more human.
And it touches on displacement in such a nuanced way, too. It's not just people who leave the country, like in Beautiful Country.
No, it's also the people who stay. But the country changes so fast around them that they become kind of strangers in their own homes, that internal displacement.
Yeah. But through all the disillusionment that compromises the struggles, what comes through is this incredible resilience, quiet dignity.
They keep searching for meaning, don't they? Even when the old certainties are gone, they hold on to these small hopes.
Mm. And I guess if you boil it down, what these stories really show us is that the real meaning, the true significance, it's not found in those big, cold numbers of national success.
No, it's in the small things, isn't it? The intimate, often messy, but deeply human efforts to connect, to find purpose, to just endure in a world that feels like it's constantly churning.
Finding the humanity inside the machine. That's what stays with you.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.